सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। I think my voice is always low. Okay. Welcome back, everyone. And I'm remembering to welcome the people watching online as well. Finally, a little too much. Yeah, that's fine. Is it echoey? Can you hear me okay at the back? Yeah. Okay. So welcome, everyone. We'll start with our first verse and the chanting of the prior verses. Kakhaluna lankriyate, kakhaluna lankriyate, drishta drishtartha sadhana patiyan, drishta drishtartha sadhana patiya, amuya kantasthitaya, amuya kantasthitaya, प्रश्नोत्तर रत्नमालिकया प्रश्नोत्तर रत्नमालिकया काच सभा परिहार्या काच सभा परिहार्य हीनाया वृद्ध सचिवेन हीनाया वृद्ध सचिवेन इह कुत्रावहितस्यात् मनुजः इह कुत्रावहितस्यात् मनुजः किल राजसेवायां किल राजसेवायां प्राणादपि को रम्यः प्राणादपि को रम्य कुलधर्मस्साधुसङ्गश्च कुलधर्मस्साधुसङ्गश्च का संरक्ष्या का संरक्ष्या कीर्तिः पतिव्रता नैजबुद्धिश्च कीर्तिः पतिव्रता नैजबुद्धिश्च का कल्पलता लोके का कल्पलता लोके सच्चिष्यायार्पिता विद्या सच्चिष्यायार्पिता विद्या कोक्षयवटवृक्षस्यात् विधिवत् सत्पात्रदत्तं दत्तदानं यत् विधिवत् सत्पात्रदत्तदानं यत् किं शस्त्रं सर्वेषां किं शस्त्रं युक्तिः युक्तिः माता च का माता च का धेनुः किं नु बलं किं नु बलं यद्धैर्यं यद्धैर्यं को मृत्युः यद् अवधानरहितत्वं यत् अवधानरहितत्वम् कुत्र विषम कुत्र विषम दुष्टजने किमिह अशौचं भवेत् किमिह अशौचं भवे ऋणं ऋणां ऋणं ऋणा। सो वी स्टॉप्ड हियर लास्ट टाइम। किम विषम व्हाट इज पॉइजन दुष्टजना द कंपनी ऑफ Dushta really means bad, but we saw last time there are no good and bad. Even if you consider yourself to be a very good person, in Hindu scriptures, we don't translate a good person. We don't translate dharma and adharma as good and bad in some sense. A good person or a bad person, there is no good or bad person, right? Because if everybody is an expression of the same divinity, then where is the question of good and bad? So we saw last time it is the behavior of the person that you would say is good or bad. And the behavior can be there for a million reasons. Just imagine if you did not have the upbringing you had. If you were born in a slum in Dharavi, or you know, if you were a homeless person, if you didn't have parents, or if you had parents who were drug addicts or who didn't really care about you, your behavior could be very much influenced today at this time in your life because of so many factors in our upbringing, in the opportunities that we are given or not given. So there's really no good or bad person. It's just good or bad behavior. And the second part of that verse was kim iha ashaucham, what is considered to be impure or unclean. And the answer was rinam, which is the debt. Rinam, man's debt. And we saw there were in the Shastras five kinds of debt have been mentioned. One is the Rishi rinam. So this is the debt we owe for the life we have. However good or difficult, however easy or difficult your life is today, it is because of however your behavior is today, good or bad, is because of so much that has come into our lives. So we owe a lot of debt. If you have a great life today, you have a lot of debt. And the Shastras say there are five kinds of debt. There's a debt to the rishis, the sages and the saints who gave us these scripture from which we know what kind of debt there are. Then there is the debt to the devas. We translated it as nature. Debt to pitrus, our ancestors, our parents, our families. Nru is nara, debt to mankind, fellow human beings. We saw in another verse last class, if you're in a job, if you're working in a job and you're rising up that corporate or whatever ladder, you're not doing it alone. Nobody in this world can do everything on their own and be successful. So we take the help of others for everything in our lives. And then finally, bhuta rinam. Bhuta means any living being. So we owe a debt of gratitude to the plants. If you're a vegetarian, hopefully most of you are vegetarian, what would we do without plants? If you're non-vegetarian, you owe debt of gratitude to the animals, which end up living on the plants anyway, right? So we owe a lot of debt. And there are specific offerings that are made to these five categories of classes of debt, people that we owe debt to. But we're not going to look at that in detail. We'll look at the next verse. Kim abhayam iha, kim abhayam iha, vairagyam, vairag. Bhayam api kim, bhayam api kim, vittameva sarvesham, vittameva sarvesham. So iha, here, in here meaning for us in this world, kim abhayam, what is fearlessness? And the answer unexpectedly is vairagyam, detachment, discernment, objectivity. Vairagyam is defined as viragasya bhava, the feeling or the attitude of being free from all worldly desires, being indifferent, not in a negative sense, but indifferent, not being pulled in by all our desires. There is in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, Vairagyam is defined as drishtanu shravika vishaya vitrishnasya vashikara sanya vairagyam. So vairagyam is drishta anushravika vishaya vitrishnasya. Vitrishnasya, for the person, for one who is Trishna, free from craving, or Trishna literally means thirst. You can translate it as the craving or thirst. Thirst of what? Drishta vishaya. Objects that are seen, objects that are experienced through our senses, and anushravika vishaya. Anushravika vishaya, objects that are heard. What does that mean? Anushravika is another word for scriptures. So things that we know from the scriptures, that means objects that we don't directly perceive with our eyes. Vashikara sanya, sanya, clear knowledge or understanding. Understanding of vashikara, bringing them under vasha, under your control. That is called vairagyam, non-attachment or dispassion. So what it really means is when we are able to firstly recognize what our desires are, especially the binding desires. Remember this term that Pooja Swamiji has used, and many of you have heard our Swamiji use it too. Binding desires are those desires that make us think that our happiness depends on the fulfillment of those desires. And if those desires are not fulfilled, we are agitated. Versus non-binding, you can have a million non-binding desires which are not fulfilled, which can never get fulfilled, may never get fulfilled in this lifetime. How about if somebody wants a desire, somebody in this audience has a desire to become the richest person on this planet? It is an achievable desire, right? But what if it does? I know for me it's never going to happen, but how likely is it for you to have this desire fulfilled? Somebody is doing that. Unlikely that this desire to become the richest person on the planet is going to get fulfilled. It could get fulfilled. You could win the lottery. I don't know if you'll still be the richest person on the planet, but you could become pretty rich. But if this desire, if you know that this desire is not going to get fulfilled in your lifetime, does it make you depressed? Why not? It's a desire that's not gotten fulfilled. Very unlikely that it'll get fulfilled. So that's an example of having a non-binding desire. You can wish for it. You can work hard towards getting your desire fulfilled. But whether it gets fulfilled or not, one, it's not entirely in our hands. If it gets fulfilled, great. Write out several million-dollar checks to all charitable organizations. If it gets fulfilled, great. If it doesn't get fulfilled, it doesn't bother you. So that is the bringing all the binding desires. Firstly, recognizing what our binding desires are, and then trying to control. Even though the sutra, Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, uses Vashikara, bringing them under control. So that is from the yoga perspective. But in Tattva Bodha, Shankaracharya's Tattva Bodha, there's a slightly different definition of Vairagyam. It is defined as Iha mutrartha phala bhoga viragaha. So viragaha is the absence of what? Artha phala bhogaha. Bhogaha is the enjoyment or the experience of what? The fruits, phala of artha, of the results of one's action. Where? Iha, in this world, in this lifetime. And amutra, in the next lifetime, in future lifetimes. And this was important because the majority of the first part of the 3/4 or more of the Vedas had specific rituals to perform, that they would perform to go to heaven after you're dead. So that heaven, going to heaven, was a very big goal in the life after. So viragaha is the absence of Arthapala bhogaha, the enjoyment of one's results, of one's actions, iha, in this lifetime or in future lifetimes. And there is a famous example given in commentaries with regard to this. It says, a person with vairagyam, somebody who has viraga, looks at the highest worldly pleasures, are pleasure of becoming the richest person on the planet, iha, worldly pleasures, or the promise of heavenly realms, going to heaven in the next life, amutra. A person with viragya looks at both of these with the same level of indifference that a normal person looks at what? Kaka vishtha. Kaka is crow. Vishtha is the droppings of a crow. So a person who has viraga or vairagyam looks at both the greatest desires that could get fulfilled in this lifetime, or if you want to go to heaven, looking at them as kaka vishtha. So next time you start looking at yourself, looking at your mind and feeling that you're getting attached to something or someone. Someone is harder. Children, grandchildren, pets. Something is just as hard, getting attached to your home, getting attached to your car. When you feel you're getting attached to anything or anyone, think of what? Crow droppings. So that attachment will drop like the crow droppings. Kim api, bhayam api kim. Kim api, and what is bhayam? Fear. Again, the answer is kind of an unexpected one. It says, sarvesham, for all, vittam eva. Vittam means wealth. It is wealth alone that causes fear. Obviously, it's not wealth that causes fear. It's the potential loss of wealth. Either the wealth leaving you or you leaving the wealth. Right? So that is very true, right? So when wealth leaves you, look at your stock portfolio every day. A little bit going down now, a lot going down. So that loss, or when you're going to die, where are you going to take that wealth with you? So you kind of want to make sure it goes to your children, grandchildren, your trust, whatever, which is obviously a sensible thing to do. But that fear of loss of that wealth is what it says, vittam eva sarvesham, for all people. In Bhajagovindam, there is a verse which says, artham anartham bhavaya nityam. So nityam, constantly or every day, bhavaya, think. Think on what? Artham anartham. Think regularly on that artham. Artham here means wealth. Wealth which is anartham, which is useless or worthless. So what are you going to take with you? So think of that wealth constantly. Nasti tatha sukhalesha satyam. Na asti, there is not, tataha, in that. Sukhaleshaha. Leshaha means a trace. There is not even a trace of sukham in that anartham, in that useless, worthless wealth. There's not even a trace of happiness. And the verse continues in Bhajagovindam. Putradapi dhanabhajam bhitihi. Bhitihi, there is fear. There is fear from what? Putrat api, even from the sun. So even from the sun, why is there fear? Because dhanabhajam, the sun, is intent upon possessing your wealth. Possessing your wealth. And this, unfortunately, is true for many families. Especially as parents grow older and the children may not have or even if they have means to survive or means to take care of themselves, unfortunately, many times they're just waiting for the parents to kick the bucket so that the wealth becomes theirs. And it's really a sad reality for many families. So most of you who have raised, hopefully, good families, you don't think about this, right? You want to leave whatever you have for your children. But on the other side of it, there are children who are waiting to get that money from you, even before you die. So, and the verse continues, sarvatraisha vihita ritihi. Ritihi, this is the norm. Sarvatra esha, this is done everywhere. This is the norm everywhere. So next time when you experience bhayam, fear, because of your dwindling stock folio, because of your son, relatives, whoever, caretaker, waiting to get their hands on your wealth, you can remind yourself of kakavishtha, that is just droppings, crow droppings. And then try to remember, in last class we discussed a couple of meditation mindfulness steps to do when you experience fear which is beyond what you have control over. You can bring those teachings to bear and practice that. And of course, that's not going to come if you've never practiced it before, right? How likely are you going to remember the class of last week, 317, 314, whatever the date was, and specifically the steps that we discussed last week, especially when you're afraid? So this is a practice we have to develop every single day. For any of these spiritual practices to really become meaningful in our lives so that we can apply them when the need is there, it has to be done every day. And, you know, these teachings are helping us, being regular, being in touch with these teachings, not on once a weekly basis. It's great. Once a week at least is better than zero times a week. But on a daily basis, that's really when the teachings become yours. And that's when these teachings really go in. Ka durlabha naranam hari bhaktihi patakam chakim patakam chakim himsa. So ka durlabha, what is difficult to achieve, naranam, for people? The answer, surprisingly, is hari bhaktihi. Bhakti means devotion, and hari here, hari is another name for Krishna, but you could just take it as devotion to God. Firstly, we need to know what is devotion. Devotion is any practice that connects us, helps us form a relationship with God, something supreme, something beyond us. And why is this bhakti, why is this difficult to achieve? Why is it difficult for most people? Several reasons. Firstly, so just imagine if you were in a conversation, heart-to-heart conversation with somebody. And you see this in TV shows and movies. Like if there is a first date, you know, a couple is meeting for the first time on the date, and the guy keeps looking at his phone every time it rings or every time it buzzes. Obviously, the girl is not going to, you know, she realizes this is not the guy for her because his attention is drawn outward. So when you, and there's no meaningful conversation that's happening, no meaningful relationship can form. So to have a meaningful relationship just with another person, we need to be fully present. We need to give our attention 24/7. And how is it going to be different when you want to develop, cultivate bhakti, devotion towards God? We need to be 24/7. We need to be less extroverted. And most of our lives, we are 24/7 extroverted. And What is the first thing that we do, most of us do when you wake up in the morning? Let's be honest. How many of you do not check your phone? Hey, not bad. Pretty good. Okay, what is the second thing after you get up out of your bed that you do after you brush your teeth, whatever you need to do? How many of you do not check your phone? Very good, I'm impressed. How many of you do not check your phone the whole day? Ah, I'm one person. And somebody said, how is that possible? How can you not check your phone the whole day? Now, I understand we all have lives that are connected. So gadgets in this day and age, you have to check your phone. I have to share something. So this week we have some construction work going on at our ashram, and they had to turn the power off a couple of times during the week. And one day we didn't have power at all on the other side. I mean, it was planned, so you know, we're prepared for it. So I did not turn my computer on the whole day. And I don't do anything on my phone except take phone calls. So it was like, oh my gosh, I have all this time to myself and I could do whatever I wanted without being pulled in by work emails, ashram emails, phone calls, whatever. So try it. Half a day. Just try. If not half a day, 1 hour. For those who have this tendency to have to look at your phone constantly, try it for an hour and see how your mind is. So we are constantly extroverted, looking out there to get to be connected, but also to fulfill our desires and to seek happiness. So by looking at that one message, or waiting to look at that one message that you're waiting for, you think you're going to be happy. Sometimes that message is not what you want to hear. So that happiness is not out there. And another reason why it is hard for people to maintain their faith. Many of you have a lot of bhakti. You have practices like puja and meditation on a regular basis. But sometimes when people suffer a tragedy in their life, when there is a loss of a loved one, that faith can be shaken. So you kind of don't feel that connectedness anymore with Ishvara, with God. We might feel abandoned. In Bhagavatam, there is a verse which gives two reasons for why it is difficult to sustain or develop this faith and to sustain it. It says, Bhayam dvitiyabhi niveshataha syad ishad apetasya viparyo smritihi. So bhayam syat, fear arises, dvitiya abhiniveshataha. Abhiniveshataha is due to adherence to or due to persistence of what? Dvitiya, duality. We saw in the last class, dvitiyad bhayam bhavati. There is fear arises because of duality. And the verse continues here, ishat apetasya. So for one who has turned away from Isha, from Ishvara. And why would one turn away from Ishvara? Viparyayaha asmritihi. So one who is not paying attention because of being distracted, or asmritihi, due to forgetfulness. And why would you forget? The verse continues, tan maya yato buddha abhajetam bhaktyaika yesham guru deva tatma tat mayaya, because of maya. So maya has a lot of meanings. The technical, we won't look at the technical meaning of maya. We could just take maya here as the other, as unreal, or we could take it as nature or prakriti. Prakriti meaning things that draw us, things that pull us outward. So here your cell phone, your computer can be taken as Maya because of Maya. Ataha, therefore, Buddha, a wise person, abhajet, should worship or should serve Ishvara how? Bhaktya ekaya, with one-pointed devotion. And whom should this person worship? Tam Isham, that Ishvara, who is Guru Devata Atma, who is none other than the Atma, the Self, the Guru, and the God, the Self of all. So being absorbed in Maya, in duality, my home, my family, my children, my job, my money, my stock portfolio, my vittam, whatever, and forgetting our essential nature, our essential non-dual nature, makes it harder for us to be devoted, to cultivate that devotion, to maintain that bhakti. So how can we cultivate that devotion? How can we become more devoted, Hari Bhakti? The best way is Karma Yoga. And specifically, Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. The attitude, buddhi, the attitude that Arpana, anything I do is an offering. Arpana is an offering to whom? To Ishvara. And as Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9:27, yat karoshi, whatever you do, yad ashnasi, whatever you eat, yat juhoshi, whatever you sacrifice, whatever rituals you do, dadasi yat, whatever you give as donation or as charity, yat tapasyasi, whatever penance or austerity you perform, Kaunteya, O Arjuna, tat kurushva, do them, do all these as what? Madarpanam, as an offering to me. And why is this Ishvara Arpana Buddhi important? And Krishna, Lord Krishna himself explains in the next verse, Shubha Shubha Phalai Revam. So Shubha and Ashubha Phala, both favorable and unfavorable results of your actions, of all our actions, mokshyase, will free you from what? Karma bandhanaihi, from the bondage of karma. For whom? Sanyasa yoga yuktatma. So for one who is yuktatma, steadfast in this sanyasa yoga, in this practice, here yoga means the practice of sanyasa, Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. In this practice of offering everything you do to Ishvara, vimuktaha is liberated. So such a person is vimuktaha, liberated. And Krishna promises, mam upaishyasi, and such a person will come to me. What that means, obviously, we're not in a Advaita perspective, not somebody going to heaven or Vishnu Loka where Krishna is, but such a person would discover that divinity, that Atma, which is the Self of everyone, including Ishvara. So when we do any action as an offering to Ishvara, rather than an I did it attitude, and when we accept, so doing an action with this Ishvara Arpana is great. But the second part of it is, when you do an action with this Ishvara Arpana Buddhi as an offering to God, but also accepting any results that come because of that action as a prasada, as a gift from Ishvara, when you have this attitude, what happens is over a period of time, it weakens this ahankara mamakara. Ahankara, I did it. We saw in a couple of classes before where this little kid has cake spread all over his mouth, and when the mom comes and asks, did you eat that cake? Said, no, I didn't do it. The little brother did it. So this attitude of ahankara, I did an action. Look how great I am. Ahankara decreases. And this mamakara, the feeling of this belongs to me, when you accept a fruit, any result, as prasada, as Ishvara prasada, the sense of karta, I am the doer, I am the bhokta experiencer, decreases. I remember some years back talking to somebody who was diagnosed at that time with cancer. And, you know, I was just saying, I'm sorry to hear about it, and, you know, how can we help? And she told me something which kind of brought these teachings to bear. She said, why is cancer different from anything else? If this Ishvara Arpana Buddhi and everything that comes from Ishvara is prasada, I have to take this cancer as prasada from Ishvara. And that is, to have that diagnosis and to have this attitude, really helpful, really helpful. Okay, and the second part of the verse, pacha kim, and what is patakam? What is crime? Pataka literally means to fall, what causes to fall. What causes us to fall, and the answer is himsa, is injury, causing injury,